So you may be surprised to know, but book distribution was my first service. And I was distributing books but even before I joined the ashram. I was very enthusiastic. I was living in an artist commune. So I'd left home, I was 19, and I was living in an artist commune. It was an abandoned holiday resort in the mountains of Sydney, right? Not big mountains there, but there were mountains. Okay, Blue Mountains, they're called. So this place was called Art Haven, like Art Heaven. So this resort had been abandoned. It was from built in the 1960s. It was pretty fancy, big swimming pool, you know, everything in the mountains. But it went out of business. So the owners just abandoned. Everyone just jumped ship. So some hippies saw this and they thought, well, hey, we could take this place over. We could use this place, right? So they moved in and then they called out to other people, hey, if you want a place to live, there's a place up here, we can make a community. So I was one of the early members of that community. I heard through other people, hey, come up to the mountains. So we moved up there, myself, my brother, and my best friend. And we lived in this community. We took over one of the cabins and we lived in this community. And there was all sorts of interesting people there. Artists, poets, astrologers, mystics, even ex-Hare Krishnas. Right? Devotees that had left. Blooped, we call it, right? So they were there. And so I got exposed to a lot of different interesting things. And I was on a spiritual quest. So during this time is when I was reading the Bhagavad Gita and I was chanting. I had my own little temple room, and this temple room was like, you know, like a little tiny room. It was a cabin, so it was a tiny room. I made it into a temple room. And so my deity was Buddha, because I didn't have any deity. I read in the Bhagavad Gita that you have to worship Krishna. And it mentions in the Bhagavad Gita that, you know, you can worship Buddha, you can worship Krishna, there's many forms of God. And I thought, okay, well, my brother had a statue of Buddha that he brought at a flea market. It was like a clay statue of Buddha. It was pretty nice and had gold, you know, necklace and things. So I put that on, and he had a chair too. He was an upholsterer. So he made this golden chair, right? It was one of his exercises getting his apprenticeship. So I thought, okay, well, that will be the Vyasa-san. So I put the golden chair there, I put Buddha on top of the chair, and then I put the parampara, you know, Hare Krishna parampara in front of Buddha. I had no idea. And then I had, all the walls were covered in spiritual pictures, Jesus and Krishna and, you know, everyone that was spiritual. They're all there. So it was a pretty powerful room. You know, it was my attempt to make a temple. And I would sit there and I would chant and I'd read the Bhagavad Gita. So I was very fired up. So while I was reading the Bhagavad Gita, I was also, every Sunday I'd go to the local ashram in the mountains. It was about an hour away. I would drive there. It was a beautiful ashram. It was called the Bhaktivedanta Ashram. And it was the first, as far as I know, it was the first rural property in ISKCON, Australia. So it was very idyllic. It was on the bank of a river. Like, there was a beautiful river called Kolo. And then there was a hill about, you know, 20, 30 meters up. And then the temple was on the hill. So it's like looking over the river. And there were palm trees. And we had peacocks. I mean, it was beautiful. And there was cows, of course. And there was a vegetable garden, and we even had wheat fields, and we had a wheat storage thing. So we'd make the fresh chapatis with the wheat, with the grind the wheat. I think you're going to do that here, right? They're talking about doing that, grinding the wheat instead of buying flour. Yeah, it's much better. It's amazing. So I would visit the Sunday feast, and I would eat everything. and then I would bring plastic containers and fill up again, and then I'd go back to the art haven, and I'd have another Sunday feast, right, with my friends. Hey, you know, I've been to the Hare Krishnas, and then we'd have another feast. I'd have two Sunday feasts. So then one day I went there and I said to one of the devotees, who was actually a friend I grew up with, it was very interesting that 9 people from my community joined the temple, many of them from the same street. And the street was called Talasi Street, like Tulsi, right? Talasi Street. So we were saying Talasi, Talasi, Talasi. It's like we're getting benefit. So literally there was myself, my brother, my sister, a friend from school, his sister, another friend, another girl just up the road. I think there was like 9 of us. All literally within an area of 200 meters. Little spot. In this very debauched neighborhood. It wasn't special. But we just got some drops of nectar fell on us, and we happened to be the chosen ones. Anyway, so I said to this devotee, he was the first one to join. His name was, back then it was Mandana. His name was Mandana. I think he's got a new name now. And he said, it was Michael. I used to know him as Michael. And he said, I said, look, I've been reading the Bhagavad Gita, and Krishna says that I have to do service. So what service do I do? I want to do some service. I'm chanting, but I want to do some service. And he says, well, you can distribute books. So then he goes to the storage room and he gives me 2 boxes of books. I think it was like Coming Back, the reincarnation book. And I don't know, maybe it was Bhagavad Gita, I don't think so. I think it was paperbacks. So he gave me 2 boxes. So I said, thank you. And so I took them back to Art Haven, and they had this festival at Art Haven, like a music festival at Art Haven. So I set up a book table. I'm not even a devotee. I set up a book table and I'm distributing books. I had no idea what I was doing, but I was enthusiastic. And people would give a donation, and I'd say, yeah, they're really good. This tells you all about reincarnation. It's real interesting. You should read it. And I distributed all the books. And I collected the donations, and then the next Sunday I gave the donations to Krishna. So I was starting even before I joined the ashram. And then because there were ex-Hare Krishnas there, they were training me up. So one of them was teaching me how to play Madanga. So I knew how to, when I joined the ashram, I knew how to play a couple of beats. And then I was learning slokas. And then another one was teaching me how to cook a sabji. Right, so I was learning how to cook. And I actually had a desire that I want to be a cook for Krishna when I join the temple. You know, one day I join the temple, I want to be a cook. So that was my first connection to Krishna, was actually book distribution. And of course, well, I had prasadam, of course. I would go to the restaurants. Another story was that I visited this restaurant, which was the first Food for Life restaurant in Australia. It was 1982, something like that. And I went with my best friends, and we drove our motorbikes. So we rode our motorbikes, and then we sat down, and then another friend from school who joined, he was a new bhakta, and he says, sit down, get some prasadam. And then he got one of the senior devotees, proper disciples, to come and preach to us. So he's sitting there, and the 3 of us are sitting at the table eating prasadam. And so I'm just woofing the prasadam. And my friends are like picking. You know, they're like, not sure about it. You know, they're like a little suspect. And I says, look, if you don't want it, I'll take yours. And I literally took their plates as well. I'm like totally into it. So I'm eating their plates of prasadam. Jita Girish, the proper disciple, is preaching, and I'm just nodding my head. No problem, this is sounds good to me. Just give me more prasadam. And my friends are really like suspect about it. So then after we finished, my friend Darren, Bhakta Darren from school, he says, oh, you need to have some books. So then he gives me 6 books. He gives me Lilamrita, volume 2. He gives me Srimad Bhagavatam, volume 6. It was like the latest Bhagavatam. I think it was 6, or might have been 2, I can't remember. I think it was 6. Anyway, and then he gives me, life comes from life, and like 6 books. And so I'm riding a bike. So I stuff them down my shirt, my jacket, and we ride home. And then on the way home, we had to get petrol. And I'm struggling to hold these books while I'm riding the bike, right? And we stop to get petrol. And my friends are saying, what are you doing with those books? Just throw them away. It's really difficult to ride. And I says, no, these are gifts from Krishna. I got to keep them. So I took the books home, and I put that Bhagavatam above my bed. And every night, I would get the Bhagavatam, and I would do this. And I would like open it up, and I'd read one verse. And that was like my oracle for the day. And so, what's Krishna have to say today? And I'd read the verse, one verse. That's all I did, is read one verse. It was too much. And another time we went to the ashram with the same two friends, and I won't mention their names. But then this is the first time I went to the ashram, actually, and this is when I first met Michael, who had just joined. He'd freshly shaven, and it was like, wow, shocking. I used to know this guy, long hair, crazy guy, like the wildest guy possible, and he's now a Hare Krishna. And I'm thinking, that's impossible, that you become a Hare Krishna. Like, one minute he's the wildest, craziest guy you know. Next minute he's like, Hare Krishna, welcome. And so he welcomes us to the ashram, and then we sit down. We went in the afternoon, so we got the maha fruit. They fed us the maha fruit. And then before we left, one other devotee came up to me and says, before you go, I have something special for you. And he has a Bhagavad Gita for all of us, right? And he says, this will release you from the path, from the cycle of birth and death. Just take this. So he gives us a Bhagavad Gita. I said, oh, thank you. I like that. I like the idea of being released from the cycle of birth and death. So then we take the Bhagavad Gita and we jump in the car and we drive home. On the way home, these two guys throw their Bhagavad Gita out the window. The same two guys that were at the restaurant that wouldn't eat their prasadam, they were picking suspect. They throw the Bhagavad Gita out of the window. And I says, no, this is special. I'm going to keep this. You just see the difference. So somehow or other, I had the right idea. I thought, no, this is special. Krishna inspired me from within not to follow their example. There was two other people, close friends, who were influencing me not to take this up. And I says, no, this is good. I'm going to keep this. So these are my early, early experiences. Like, this is 81, 82, before some of you were born, I guess. I don't know. And so when I joined the temple, then I went to this restaurant, became my service. I would actually serve prasadam at the restaurant. And we had the system in Australia back in those days was that people in the 70s and early 80s, people didn't like us, particularly in the late 70s. They really didn't like us. So devotees would get arrested when chanting on the street. The police would come and just arrest them, put handcuffs on them, just for chanting. This is Australia, not Russia, right? And they would get arrested for distributing books. And so because there was a lot of misunderstanding. Someone had propagated a lot of misinformation and it scared the public. So the police felt like they had to do something to shut us down. So then the devotees realized that we have to change our strategy. This is not working. People are not getting the mercy. So they shifted completely and they thought, okay, let's make money and then give books away for free and give prasadam for free. Just do free festivals, everything free, right? So we started selling things, right? So when one of the early services, when I joined, I was selling candles. And you may think, oh my God, that's so mundane, right? But actually it wasn't, because we were totally absorbed in serving Krishna. Our mentality was, I'm selling these candles, 100% of the money goes to the temple, and the temple buys books with those sales, and then we give the books away for free. So it was incredibly uplifting. It was amazing. Externally, you may think, mundane, that's not sankirtan. But actually, we were totally connected to the sankirtan. To the point where Australia, back in those days, was the biggest book distributing country in the world. We would distribute more books than all the other countries. Like, swamp them completely. Because during our Christmas marathon, we would collect like $2 million. $2 million in 1 month. I personally would do like $35,000. Just one devotee. And there were hundreds of devotees. 1,000 devotees collecting. I would do $35,000. Selling candles, selling paintings, selling something, right? And we give all that money to the BBT. The BBT would print books. We'd have massive, you know, warehouses full of books. And then throughout the year, we'd give those books for free. Just flood the country with free books. And granted, there were plenty of people that didn't appreciate the books and threw the books away. But the majority of people did keep the books. And they did get benefit from the books. So it was an effective method. And the proof is in the pudding, because we totally transformed the attitude. Everyone started loving us. Suddenly when they saw a Hare Krishna, they'd give us the thumbs up. Oh yeah, Hare Krishnas. They give free food. They give free books. Yeah, they're good people. Like that. Just within a couple of years. Completely flipped. Because all they would see us doing is like just giving and contributing in a positive way, and happy and chanting, and it's free prasadam, eat more, and here's the book, free book. And so it really worked for us. Now the devotees, they sell the books. We don't do that anymore. It's just book distribution, pure book distribution, selling books, getting a donation. It works quite well. But I think the main thrust in Australia is still prasadam. It's even Prabhupada even mentioned, I can't remember where, but I think he said something like, you will conquer Australia with prasadam. So that's a fact. So there are some countries where that works, you know, it's more effective. It just depends on the mentality of the people. Australians are pretty laid back. They're not very philosophical, generally speaking. So they're more like, you know, very casual. Oh, prasadam, yeah, let's be friends. Okay, let's have a philosophical, let's talk, like that. Not, you know, hard philosophy. So I did book distribution. I had, you know, first an experience selling books as well as giving books for free. In fact, this is another interesting tidbit, which not everybody knows about, but in 1980... I think it was 86, 87. I had the world book distribution record. Yes. I distributed 2,000 books in one day. But for free. But still. Yeah, I know. Imagine. Even if it's for free, it's not easy. 2,000 books in one day. So I got fired up. And I was like, you know, I'm going to distribute a lot of books today. And so there were a whole bunch of books. You imagine we're making all this money, we're printing all these books, but there wasn't as many people distributing, so we had lots of books. So I thought, no, I'm gonna get rid of 2,000 today. So I loaded up the van, and I went to one corner of the city, a very busy intersection of Sydney. And I just loaded the books up, like, you know, whatever, 10 or 12 boxes. I don't know how many books were in each box. And I went from 7 o'clock in the morning to like 10 o'clock at night. And I distributed 2,000 books, free books. On the street. Hey, how you doing? We're giving these books away today. I think it was Christmas time. It's probably close to Christmas. Merry Christmas. Take these books. It'll make you feel happy. You know, it'll help you escape the cycle of suffering, you know, whatever I said. And people took them. A few people threw the books away, but the majority of people actually took them with them and put them in their bags. And so, you know, it wasn't recognized, because in the BBT newsletter you have to sell the books. So none of this was ever recognized. But there are many, you know, many of us in Australia back in the day, we distributed lots of books. But because it was free, it wasn't counted. So you don't get to hear about it. There's a whole history that devotees don't know about in Australia. Like I was telling one devotee yesterday, that even the Mayapur temple was built not by books. It was built by devotees in Australia selling paintings. The original temple. Not the one now. But the original temple and ashram, lotus building, all that, was all built by selling paintings and candles in Australia. We collected so much money, millions of dollars, and we gave it to Bhavananda, and Bhavananda had that money. Because back then they didn't have donors in India. There was no support in India. Very little support. So most of the money came from the Australian Yatra. So we actually built those original buildings selling paintings. So that's an example of how you can, you know, even the most seemingly mundane activity, you can purify, you can transform it into a spiritual activity. And we felt, the proof is that we felt enlivened. We didn't feel like salesmen. We were totally enlivened. We were fired up. We were getting realizations about Krishna and Krishna's mercy. It was amazing. So that's one thing you have to remember, is that when you're distributing these books, don't fall into the trap that you're a salesman. You know, that you think I'm just a salesman. You're not a salesman. You are giving the greatest mercy to these people. It's such a special blessing that you're giving them by giving them these books. You're not a salesman. You're a transcendental gardener planting seeds of bhakti. It's very, very different. So when I think about book distribution, I think about Prabhupada's incredible austerity to write these books. Every morning he would get up early. He would go to bed around 10 o'clock and he would rise about 12 o'clock, sometimes 1 o'clock. If he was a bit tired. So he'd sleep for 3 hours. And then he'd translate. Early in the morning, when everyone else is sleeping, Prabhupada would translate. And he'd do this every single day, all over the world, for how many years? 11 years. That's all he did. So you can imagine, think about that. That's an austerity, right? Getting up early and translating books every morning. And then on top of that, Prabhupada's giving lectures. Prabhupada's initiating disciples. Prabhupada's opening temples. He's traveling around the world. I mean, his schedule is unbelievable. For most people, it would be impossible to even consider taking on a task of translating these ancient scriptures. Not only just translating, but being able to communicate the message in a way which would be understandable by common people. So he had to really work hard to take this transcendental knowledge, this very high information, and package it in a way which was palatable to everybody and assimilable by everyone. Incredible. And he did that every day. So that itself should inspire you to want to help Prabhupada, to want to distribute his books. And that's why he would say, you'll please me so much if you distribute these books, because he put so much effort, so much of his life was dedicated to getting this information out. Because that was the core instruction that he got from his spiritual master. Aboy Chiran, if you get money, print books. Prabhupada was 21 then, is that correct? He was 21 when he heard that? He was a young man. He was 21, he had a little book, he had Vrindavan with him, his son, when he was told that. He was a Grihastha, young Grihastha. Imagine, how old are you? Is anyone 21 here? Everyone's over 21, right? Right? How old are you? Huh? Yeah, so you look so young. Right? So we're all old men, old women, right? Imagine you're 21. 21, you're like a baby, right? Isn't it? You think you're so old when you're 21, but we're really young still. We're still very fresh. So Prabhupada was fresh. Fresh Grihastha. He says, if you get money, print books. Okay. That was all. If you get money, print books. So that seed was planted in Prabhupada's heart. He never forgot it. To the point where 50 years later, he thought, you know what, I still have to fulfill the wish of my spiritual master. I have to share this information to the Western world. He gave him two core instructions: print books and share this information to the Western world. So Prabhupada took those to heart, and that's what he did at the age of 70. It's crazy. I'm 54 now, and some of you may be around my age as well. How old are you now? 47. No, you're a very old man. He's transcendental. Even older. How old? Bhavananda, how old?
80.
Woo! Unbelievable. Hey, Bhavananda. So, you know, Prabhupada was 70. So you remember when you were 70. Imagine starting a worldwide mission at the age of 70. I mean, it's amazing that at your age, you come to the temple, you chant, you participate in this, you do your service, and that's glorious. Imagine starting a worldwide movement. Such a monumental task. So Prabhupada is our inspiration, our example, our everything. He's just unbelievably special. And what did he do? He dedicated his life to getting this information out in the form of books. So if we consider ourselves a follower of Prabhupada, a lover of Prabhupada, if we really appreciate him for who he is, then we want to share this information, to participate in his jagya, his personal service to Krishna. So distributing these books is such a wonderful thing to do. The other day I was explaining how, you know, these books, they tell us what to do, and the Sankirtan is Prasadam and Sankirtan. But I want to be clear here that book distribution is part of Sankirtan. That's the point. So yes, the movement is chanting Hare Krishna, Sankirtan, and Prasadam. That's the fundamental activities of the movement. But this is Sankirtan. These books are the Brihat Madanga. So you're not just distributing books, selling books like a book salesman. You are doing kirtan. Never forget that. This is the big Madanga. The Krishna consciousness movement is based on this principle. Chant the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra as much as possible, both inside and outside the temple, and as far as possible distribute prasadam. So book distribution fits into both those categories. One is that it's the big Madanga. It's chanting Hare Krishna. It's non-different. Bhaktisiddhanta made this clear. That was his contribution, major contribution to the Sankirtan movement, is that he explained how transcendental book distribution was non-different from kirtan. So Prabhupada took that on. But he was the one that established that concept, Bhaktisiddhanta Maharaj. And these books are also prasadam. When you're distributing books, you're distributing prasadam. So I actually came across something, and I put this in the Food for Life training manual. It's very interesting. And it's about Sangha. Sangha. Whoever knows what Sangha is, association. So Srila Prabhupada explains the responsibility of devotees to give sadhu sangha. This is one of our duties, is to give sadhu sangha, to give association to the fallen conditioned souls, and once again the potency of prasadam, right? So this is in the Anchilila 132. All our devotees in the ISKCON community should become pure Vaishnavas. All of you. You have to become a pure Vaishnava. So that by their mercy, all the people in the world will be transferred to Vaikuntha Loka. Even without their knowledge, they can be transferred to Vaikuntha Loka. No knowledge. Everyone should be given a chance to take prasadam and thus be induced to chant the holy names of Hare Krishna and also dance in ecstasy. By these three processes, although performed without knowledge or education, even a dog went back to Godhead. It's very powerful, right? So in this regard, there's an interesting comment by Bhaktivinoda Thakur. Let me read. And this is from the Food for Life training manual, so it's in the context of that. Our Food for Life program was one of the many ways in which devotees can give their association to the non-devotees. And I can say our book distribution is also one of the many ways in which we can give people association. Especially those whom would ordinarily be difficult to approach through other methods. In this regard, there is a very nice instruction from Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur about the power of sadhu sangha. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur writes, in the scriptures, devotional service and pious activity are considered fortunate. Pious activities can be divided into three categories. The first pious activity is called bhaktya unmukhi sakriti. It's pious activities that awaken one's dormant Krishna consciousness. Right? It's a pious activity, but it awakens your Krishna consciousness. That's the first one. The second one, it's called bhoganmukhi sakriti. Bhoganmukhi sakriti. Pious activities that bestow material opulence. Right? That's bhoganmukhi. And then the third is pious activities that enable the living entity to merge into the existence of the Supreme are called mokshanmukhi sakriti. Right? So three activities. One awakens Krishna consciousness, one bestows material opulence, and one enables you to merge with the Supreme. Mokshanmukhi. Alright? So Bhaktivinoda Thakur comments on this. He says, the last two awards, bhoganmukhi and mokshanmukhi, the last two awards of pious activities are not actually fortunate. Pious activities are fortunate when they help one to become Krishna conscious. The good fortune of bhaktyunmukhi is attainable only when one comes in contact with a devotee. By associating with a devotee willingly or unwillingly, one advances in devotional service, and thus one's dormant Krishna consciousness is awakened. So what do we learn from that? When you distribute books, especially when you distribute books, you are giving people bhaktyunmukhi sakriti. It's pious activities of sadhu sangha, even though they don't know it. They have no idea. Just by being in your presence, because you're doing sankirtan, right? You're not doing selling books. You're doing sankirtan. You are on, by nature, by the nature of that activity, you are Brahma Bhuta. You are transcendental. You're on the transcendental platform. It's not a mundane activity. So by that fact alone, people are getting the benefit of your association. You may not think you're very special, but by the action of doing that service, you are transcendentally situated. And therefore that person, even if they don't know anything, they could be the most ignorant person in the world, they're getting benefit by that activity. Even they don't buy a book. Even just by being in your presence. That's the power of this. That's the power of Krishna's mercy. That we are carriers of Krishna's mercy. So when you go out and you have these books are Krishna, and the activity itself is Krishna. Now you still may think, oh, I'm a nobody. And that's okay. You can be a nobody. It doesn't matter. You're still a vehicle for Krishna's mercy. You've been selected to be a vehicle for Krishna's mercy, whether you like it or not. And so you actually have the potency in your hand to deliver these people. Even if they don't even take a book, they get benefit. That's powerful. What to speak if they take a book, if they touch a book. Whew, so much benefit. So understand the power that you have, the blessing, the fortune that you have to gift these special books. It's amazing. It's absolutely amazing. So when you go out, embrace that fortune. Be enthusiastic. Share that wonderful gift of Krishna consciousness, the seeds, the fruits of, you know, of bhakti, like Lord Chaitanya talked about. I was thinking about this over the last few days about, you know, techniques for distributing books. So when I first started distributing books as a devotee, you know, I told you that I was doing it before I joined the temple. Then when I actually started doing books, I didn't want to do it the traditional way. You know, go out and just, hey, where are you from? Oh, yeah, I'm from that, you know, da-da-da-da-da-da-da, here's the book, we're giving them out to everybody, everyone's chipping in, blah, blah, blah. And that's okay, that can work. But I wanted to do something a little different, so I thought, you know what? And one of the problems I had with book distribution back then was that you would meet people and never see them again. And I'm thinking, well, that's not good. How do you cultivate these people? Right, this is back in 1986. So I was, back in those days, I was reading a lot about what the French yatra was doing, Bhagavan Maharaj. And they had this thing called the Desire Tree. It was a database, right? And they would collect people's names and put it in the database, you know, like, and they were basically, they were, that was the first example of cultivating people. Like taken through a process, like what's called donor management, you know, content relationship management, CRM, right? Everyone knows what that is now. But back then it was a new idea. Actually, you want to develop a relationship and take them through a process. Now online it's called funnels, sales funnels, where you give a free thing away. You know, give us your email and you download this free PDF. So it's a sales funnel. You get people to give their email, and then you take them through a sales funnel where you give them more and more things and you upsell them. It was a process of developing a relationship. So back then I thought, well, that's a good idea. What if I do that? So back then I had a Macintosh computer, a Mac Plus, like the first Mac computer, I think it was. The temple bought this Mac computer, like a little box, right? Like $6,000. We had a lot of money back then. So they bought, I was brahmachari then, and that's how I learned how to use computers. The temple got this Mac Plus. And I thought, let me create a database. And I thought, well, I can't be cultivating people that I meet on the street because I'll never see them again. So why don't I just go to the shops? Right? Because we already had a tradition in Australia. Remember I told you we would sell things, right? We wouldn't sell on the street. We would go door to door. We would go shop to shop. We would sell t-shirts, everything, candles, paintings, and we'd knock on the door, go shop to shop. Go into the shop and say, hey, how you doing? I'm just in the area. I've got these great paintings, they're really inexpensive, and I'll only take a minute to look at them. So it was like we would address the three objections right away. The three objections people have when you sell anything is, I don't have enough time, they're probably too expensive, and I'm probably not going to like them. So we would address those three objections right off the bat. So I had a technique, I'll just backtrack here, but I had a technique, I would knock on the door, and then I'd turn my back. Like this is if I was doing house to house, I'd turn my back, and I'd just be looking around like this. And then the lady would come to the door and say, hello, can I help you? And I'd go, oh. And I'd turn around and say, oh, how are you doing? I'm just in the air, I've got these lovely paintings, it'll just take a minute to look at them, and they're really inexpensive. Right there? And she'd go, okay. Because right away I undid all of her objections right off the bat. And so she then let me show her, and I'd show her the paintings and sell her some paintings. But the key component there was to first address the three objections and show yourself as being detached. You didn't care. Very key component when you're selling. You have to be completely detached. So I would by turning my back and just looking as if I didn't care, it's like she thought, well, wow, he doesn't care about the sale. And then I had another technique if I was selling paintings, right? And these are all pertinent because you can take these concepts and apply them to book distribution. So they would look at the paintings and they'd say what they liked. And I'd say, oh, that's a great selection. I like that one too. And then they would say inevitably, well, how much are they? And without hesitating, I would just make numbers up. I said, well, that's $20, that's $150, that's $200, that's $350. But I'll tell you what I'll do, I'll give you the lot for $150. Like that. So I would just make up some crazy numbers. I'll tell you what I'll do, give them a crazy deal. And then immediately I change the subject. What's it like living in this part of town? I've heard a lot about it. You know, I've got some friends and can I use the bathroom? And I'd talk about anything but the paintings. And so immediately I took all the pressure off them. And they were like, they couldn't believe it. Literally, we talk about anything for 10 minutes. Their furniture, the kids, the dog. And then they would say, well, do you take a check? I said, yeah, I take a check. And then I changed the subject again. Like, I didn't want to sell. And that translated to them that, wow, he must be selling a lot. He doesn't care. Very important component if you're doing book distribution. You want to be detached. Don't be attached. So if you say to people, you know, we're giving these books out today, and, you know, they're getting a great response. So the first thing you want to establish is that people love these books, that you're doing really well. So you have to plant that seed in their mind. So a couple of ways you do that is you be enthusiastic. You're having a good day. You're not unhappy, right? So, and then you would say something like, oh, I've been getting a great response today. That's it. Just, that's all you say. Don't go into details. I'm getting a great response today. It's amazing. This is a really good area. And then change the subject. So plant the seed of success and then change the subject. Talk about them, talk about whatever, right? And then, again, when you ask for the donation, you say, you know, everyone's chipping in. It's like, whatever you can afford, it's fine. And then change the subject again. Don't stay on that point because they feel the pressure. You have to change the subject. You plant the seed and then change the subject. Very critical. I had an idea too today that I don't know if anyone's done this before, but you know this concept of paying it forward, where you pay it forward? You'd like do something unconditionally, like you give a gift to someone or you'd make a donation with the idea of in the future, I would program my mind that I already achieved the goal. So there's absolutely no reason to be attached. It's like, what's the problem? I'm already successful. I got the money. I can go home now for one. I can go home now and, you know, take Rashad. So you use your mind to make your mind your best friend. This is how you engage your mind in Krishna's service. The mind's not just an enemy. You can use the mind to be your best friend. This is a practical example. Use your mind to engage in Krishna's service to help you to become more confident and detached. The mind is a tool. Just like your legs, your hands are tools, your mind is also a tool. Don't see it just as an enemy. It can be your best friend. So I'd say, I'm already successful. I've already $2,000 in my pocket right now. So when I'd approach people, it's like, I don't need your business. You want to buy? Buy. If you don't, I don't care. I got $2,000 in my pocket right now. So you could transform that. You could say, I've already distributed 100 books. What's your quota normally? What's the quota? 50 books? Something? 20? 20, 30? Okay, so let's make it 40. If 20 books is like an average, your quota becomes 40. I've already distributed 40 books. So say this over and over again, like 200 times in your mind, and convince yourself that that's actually happened, right? Create that reality. It's like the law of attraction. Thoughts are things, right? Thoughts literally are things. They're the seed of manifest material, you know, activity, material manifestation. They start with a thought. The TOVP started as a thought. Now it's a massive building. A massive, monstrous, incredible construction. It started as a thought. Prabhupada had a thought. He gave that. He shared that idea with other people. They had the thought. And eventually, after 30, 40 years, it manifested. Right? Thoughts are things. Use your mind in Krishna's service by convincing it with positive affirmations, with things that you want. Think of things that you want. Manifest them, starting with the thought. I've already distributed 40 books today. It's amazing today. I've got had such a great response. Use your mind in Krishna service, and you'll find amazing things will happen. And 20 books becomes nothing. See, double what you want. Double your quota and use your mind. So these are some thoughts to meditate on. I hope they're helpful. they do work. I promise you they work. I have many incredible stories, but you know, most of them are related to the paraphernalia of Sankirtan. I didn't tell you about the book, the shop to shop. So I thought, okay, let me do the shop to shop. So I actually got a basket, and my sister was just a new devotee then, and I got her to make cookies. So I had in the basket, right, I put Bhagavad Gita, cookbook, and then a whole bunch of cookies, and then invitations to the restaurant. And I go shop to shop, you know. Hello, how are you doing? My name is Priya. I'm from the, you know, Krishna temple. We're giving away free invitations to our Sunday feast today. And also I got some free cookies. Like that was the introduction. So I give them a card. Here's some cookies. Everyone stops their work. They all come around the counter. They're like looking at the eating the cookies, and then they notice some books. And I say, yeah, there's a cookbook there. You can learn how to make the cookies. Right? And then they look at the cookbook. I say, oh, that's the Bhagavad Gita. That's the philosophy behind the cooking. Oh, really? The Bhagavad Gita. So they take the book and look at the books and everything. And then instead of selling on the spot, I would take orders. I wouldn't sell on the spot. I say, yeah, I'm taking orders today. I deliver on Friday. So then I had an order book. So they had their cookies, they're eating their cookies, they're looking at the cookbook. Well, I'll take a cookbook. And I get their name, you know, Cindy. One cookbook for Cindy. Billy wants a Bhagavad Gita. Da 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 da. And I take an order. And I get a deposit. Oh, can you put a deposit down, you know? And they give me like $10. And I take the $10, mark it on the receipt, give them the receipt, and then I'd return back on Friday and give them the book. It was low pressure, and it worked amazing. And one of the other beautiful things about this, I got their contact information. I would take their card, go home to the temple, put it in the database. Oh, I met Cindy today. She ordered a Bhagavad Gita or a cookbook. She's like 21, and she's a vegetarian. It's just something about them, you know, something that was interesting. So I started cultivating these people to the point where I'd come around again and again, and then they'd invite me to their home to cook prasadam. They're like, I can come and I can teach you how to cook if you like. Oh, that sounds like a good idea. Can I invite some friends? Yeah, invite some friends. And then I'd bring, you know, I had some special Sankirtan pots, and I'd go to their home with another bhakta, and we'd cook dinner for them. And this all started from book distribution. So the only way you can possibly do this is if you have an opportunity where you can actually, you know, they're in their own environment, their shop, and... You know, and then you actually have time to like cultivate some sort of relationship, and there's no pressure. And then, you know, you can build that relationship. But it worked really well. And I did all of Sydney, you know, a big part of Sydney, shop to shop like that, and get all the contacts like that. So there's many ways to do this. Don't just think that there's only one way to do it. You have to be innovative, creative. Right? We all have unique skills and experiences that we can use in Krishna service. So, you know, think outside the box. Why do it always the same way? Alright. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Hare Krishna.